Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we will end the month of March here, kind of looking around, do a little bit of recruiting conversation. We've got some questions from listeners. Nice little podcast that we think we have in store. Want to begin every podcast as we do, thanking our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce. We've received some great feedback recently from different people that we've been able to partner with, and Louisiana being one of them. So it's been a great partnership for both of us, and just want to thank you, the listener. The feedback that we've gotten over the extent of this relationship has been incredible, particularly upon social media. So just want to thank you, the listeners, and thank Louisiana for producing a product that we can proudly talk about and authentically discuss our pleasure of using it. So, Bud, let's jump right into it, man.
Let's do it, dude. As always, like you said, thanks to Louisiana Hot Sauce. So I think this episode will mostly be listener-driven, right? I was at a recruiting event over the weekend. We'll talk a little bit about that. But for the most part, just want to address some questions. Since the last episode, Ingram, we had 377 questions. That is too many for us to get to tonight, unfortunately. But we looked through a good amount of them. A lot of them are duplicates. So if you asked a popular question, there's a good chance that we are going to get to it or something similar to it. And I got to tell you, let's just open up tonight with probably the most popular question that we received. And that's about the dancing and the music and the over-the-top celebrating at practice that people are seeing from the open practices and from the videos that are being sent out from practice. And like, hey, what, why don't they focus on football? And is this really what they need to be doing, or are they going to be doing this during the year? And there's a lot of people, I think, are understandably not concerned, but just asking, hey, what's up with this? Because it is very different from what the old staff did. And so I think we should talk about kind of the meaning or the method to the madness, if you will.
I mean, I'll just give my opinion real briefly. I think it's ultimately it doesn't really matter if you celebrate or if you sit there stone-faced and how you approach practice. It what does matter is what you're able to take out of it and how much you're able to progress your individual game. But if you're able to lightheartedly participate in things or have more of a bounce in your step, then maybe it makes football practice a little bit easier to go through. Football practice is at times it can be fun, at times it can be absolutely miserable. So I think it's just nice to see a team have some lightheartedness to it. Certainly seems to be a lot more camaraderie throughout all segments of the team, but I think it's just more to get guys to be loose and to try to make it as enjoyable process as possible while still learning and advancing your trade or your skill.
I think there's something to that, and especially what you said there with the camaraderie. I want to take you back to what Willie Taggart said at this National Signing Day party. And he said, I wasn't here last year, but when I watched last year's film, I saw a team that didn't play for one another. I saw a team that didn't play as a team. And that stuck with me, and I thought about that. And I guarantee you, Taggart, in talking, asking around people who were here, I guarantee he's come to understand that this team was very clicky last year. You had certain factions on this team that didn't like one another, didn't hang out with one another really ever. You had a quarterback who hung out with a lot of guys who would be singled out by the head coach, the prior head coach, as not working real hard in practice and wouldn't get on him enough to really kind of make them work hard. And I think that caused resentment from other players and a lot of guys that played, as individuals, especially once the season was lost. And so, Ingram, I think they are trying to force this team, quite honestly here, to play more as a team via like forced over the top celebrations. And I don't think it's forced is probably not the right word, but they want it to become a habit that you are genuinely, honestly excited when your teammate does something well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the ways they're doing it. Like, hey, he just did something badass. Go celebrate with him, right? After a while, that's contagious. People start to really like that. Will they do it this much in the fall? No. They're going to be more game planning. They're going to have other stuff they're going to have to put in. And they won't need to do this much in the fall because they will have already made up a lot of ground, in theory, on the team camaraderie aspect, on making this team be a little bit less clicky than it was last year, getting them to play more as one. So I think that's a large part of it. You got one day you got a lot of hip hop, the next day you got, you know, some pop country and all this other stuff. You know, some days some classic rock out there. You know, Taggart really puts a lot of thought and effort into making sure he thinks of like a theme for the day's music, and they think about a lot of this stuff. There's kind of a hidden purpose to this stuff. It's not just, hey, let's just have a lot of fun. And I do think that having fun is important, because if you're going to get buy-in, you do got to make sure that the guys have fun, especially if you came from sort of an authoritarian type coach previously, which is kind of what you're coming off in the transition.
Yeah, you always see that a lot of times swings between, hires made between players, coaches, and just the way that the various regime kind of approached or the response they got from the locker room. And it's certainly a change. It'll be interesting to see, as you mentioned, how much that may taper down as we exit this kind of first practice sessions in spring and transfer more into fall when that comes. But it's certainly something we had a lot of questions about, so appropriate that we touched on it at the top of the podcast. But the other series of questions that were most frequently thrown our way just involved speed and tempo and the rate at which practices were moving. And obviously this is a little more geared towards what the offense will ultimately look like, but a bunch of different questions just surrounding what they were doing at practice and how they were trying to a general uptick in pace of which they operated.
It really is a lot faster than how Jimbo Fisher ran practices. And Jimbo did run them tempo, but this is tempo, man. Like, this is weaponizing tempo. You know, how fast do they want to go? Do they have a set number of plays or possessions they want to hit? You know, I went back and looked at USF and at Oregon, and I can't ever find Willie Taggart saying I have a set number of possessions or plays. So, you know, maybe he is concerned with, instead of those type of things, maybe he's concerned with I don't know, like explosive rating or something like that. But they want to go as fast as they possibly can, while at the same time not committing too many mistakes, and hopefully catching the defense either in a bad call or bad situation or a bad substitution, to where the defensive personnel on the field is really not what that defensive staff wants to be on the field when they know what the offense is about to come with. This has been a culture shock for a lot of these guys. They're not used to playing at this tempo. I think it's going to help the offense out, certainly, to stay in a good rhythm. But I also think it's going to help out Florida State's defense practicing against this even more than they used to.
Completely agree with what you said, particularly about what kind of some of the positive dividends can be for a defense when seeing something like this. You had what I thought was a fantastic article, and I would point people in the direction of it if they have not already read it. I believe it was titled "The Role of the QB's Legs in Florida State's Gulf Coast Offense," something you put out on the 27th of March, and some really interesting stuff as far as what our expectations as far as a fan base should be, as far as seeing the involvement of the quarterback in the offense as far as a runner. And just some of the statistics that you pulled out from his time at his previous stops, kind of hand it over to you from there. Just give people an idea as to what you found.
What I wanted to find really was, how much more often is Florida State going to run the quarterback in this offense than it did in the last offense? And I knew, look, Willie Taggart went very, I think he actually might have won at D1AA national title. If not, he certainly had a really successful season at Western Kentucky when he was a player. He left as the all-time leading rusher in 1AA history from the quarterback position. I mean, almost 4,000 career rushing yards from the QB spot, 47 touchdowns. I mean, that's Lamar Jackson-esque. I think Jackson had 50, but also played more games. So certainly, if your head coach is a guy who is an incredible running quarterback, he's going to make that an emphasis of the offense. At the very least, you know that opposing defenses are going to have to respect the quarterback's legs and the threat of the quarterback running. But I wanted to know, you know, how much more often does Taggart run the QB than Florida State did? So with the help of Bill Connolly, who runs Football Study Hall and does stats for SB Nation, I said, Bill, you know, hit him up in our Slack chat. I said, hey, can you get me the stats here showing the non-sack rushes and non-kneel-down rushes for Florida State's quarterbacks under Jimbo And then for the quarterbacks under Taggart, since he switched to the Gulf Coast offense, which was in 2015, his second last year at USF. And you know, it was really interesting. And on the surface, the stats suggest that Florida State is going to run the quarterback about three times as often as it was at FSU. But I started to look at it and I said, you know, I don't know that it's going to be quite that much. Are we really going to have, you know, 12 to 15 quarterback runs in a game? I'm not so sure. And so I think if you look at some other factors, you can kind of arrive at a more accurate number. You know, and that was controlling for pace, by the way, as well. So it was not only total runs, but, you know, Taggart was running the quarterback about one every six plays. Jimbo was doing it about, I think, one out of every 17 and a half plays. Mm-hmm. So, you know, about three times as many there anyway. I hope y'all can follow this. If you can't, certainly there's an article out there on Tomahawk Nation you should read, like Ingram said. But I looked at it and I said, okay, at USF, he ran the quarterback a ton. But that quarterback is actually being looked at as a running back prospect by the NFL, Quentin Flowers. Nobody's really giving him a shot to play quarterback because he's not he kind of just sprays the ball all over the place. So it made sense to run him a ton. I mean, he had close to 200 carries both years. When he got to Oregon, it was a little bit different. Justin Herbert was their QB. And Justin Herbert, I think, is a name that a lot of people don't know. But I've been watching a lot of Oregon from this last year. And this kid's a stud. I mean, he's a lot better throwing the ball than anybody on FSU's roster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot better. Like, I think this kid has a chance to be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, he's got a chance year. To really see a stock pop in the draft. I agree.
And if y'all know my opinion on Francois and Blackman, I do not think they have first-round type potential. He's not as good of a runner as those two are. So I had to look at it and said, okay, when he has a truly elite-level passer, he does, you know, this, which was like 1.75, 1.8 of what Fisher did. When he has an incredible runner, he does it about, you know, three and a half times as often as what Jimbo did. So I think if you look at that, somewhere in the middle between Flowers and Herbert is what Florida State's going to be working with here. And it also is running ability-wise what they're recruiting to. I mean, if you look at the Fomacon kid or the Howell kid or the Jaden Daniels kid, they're all looking like that. So I think this will hold true in the future as well. I think just a kind of quick and dirty number here will be about twice as often. I think Florida State will run the quarterback about twice as often as it did under Jimbo Fisher. And that will force defenses to respect the run quite a bit more from the QB position, which should open up some other things in the offense, and it should make the defense just a little bit more hesitant. Kind of like, you know, when y'all are facing a dangerous quarterback, when FSU's defense is, you kind of have that little knot in your stomach, like, man, I hope the rush gets there, because if it doesn't, this kid might take off and burn us, or, hey, we can't be super aggressive against that play because that quarterback could pull the ball and run it instead of handing it off. I do think defenses will respect the quarterback run more in this new offense, which was an issue with the last offense. So I think when you factor in sort of a 2x increase in frequency, but also factor in that the number of plays is going to go up quite a bit in Willie Taggart's offense, I think we'll start to see probably about, I don't know, 7 to 11 quarterback runs per game, maybe 7 to 10, which is, you know, about one, you know, ish per series, depending on how many times you get the ball in the game. The other thing I found was that, interestingly here, despite the fact that Taggart's teams were more often behind because they didn't have a huge talent advantage like Jimbo's did, his quarterbacks were sacked 53% less often. That's a big difference, man.
I thought this was the most interesting part, or not the most interesting, but maybe the part that I wouldn't have expected the most, just the general idea. And again, we'll point people to the direction of the article. It's better to read than listen to us talk about. But just because you got a quarterback that's running more doesn't necessarily mean you've got a guy that's absorbing all that more hits, particularly because of what it can do to your sack numbers.
So what I found was that this is a spread offense, but it is a spread power offense. They are a running football team and have been under Taggart for the last 3 years and really throughout his career. They were a 64% run team at Oregon. Florida State last year, I think, was 53% run. So considerably more runs. I think 142 more run plays on the year and 41 fewer pass plays. So they are not chucking the ball around all over the place like you would think with a typical spread offense. But one thing I noticed is that a very large percentage of the passes in Willie Taggart's offense are off of play action. And typically you don't get sacked as much on play action because the defense is having to pause because they have to respect the threat of the run fake. I also think that, you know, the quarterbacks are probably encouraged to take off a little bit sooner than they were in Fisher's thing. I don't think Taggart's system has him reading 1-2 and then, you know, go to the backside 3-4 very often. Now, I'm not saying that was all the time in Jimbo's system either. That certainly it was not. But less just pure drop back passing without play action is going to lead to fewer sacks. So that's kind of how we arrive at that. And then I took a look and I also compared it to Dan Mullen and Clemson. And interestingly, Dan Mullen runs his quarterback a lot more than Willie does. I mean, he ran Dak Prescott, I think like 500 times in his career or something like that. I mean, just this is the guy that had Tim Tebow. So certainly he believes in running the heck out of the quarterback almost more as a weapon as opposed to what I think Willie thinks of it as more of a way to keep the defense honest.
Again, it's something that we'll point people to. It's a really great article, Bud. I know that with some of your spread responsibilities, you don't get to write as much as you used to, but it was a good article. Point people in the direction of it, and we'll move on to the next series of questions that we got. A lot of recruiting questions in general, and some that we have kind of sprinkled throughout, but a pretty repetitive series of questions that had to do with coach's strategy behind when they were scheduling visits and maybe some of the ideas or thoughts behind some of the spacing of the visits.
I think we can just address that as a general topic. I agree with you there. So people were asking, hey, why was their list of kids on quote-unquote junior day, which was Saturday, you know, rather light? And I said, well, I don't think this staff wants to have 30 or 40 kids come in and have to show them all a bunch of individual attention at once. This staff seems to be okay, and perhaps it's because they're younger or more motivated to prove something because they just got here. But they seem to be okay with putting in more days, you know, working hard on recruiting, having, you know, taking kids on visits and showing around campus and giving them the one-on-one attention and having their high school coach sit in on your position group meeting or on your practice day after day after day. I mean, they've had legitimate stud kids on campus.
I was going to say, if you don't follow recruiting on a granular level in March, I don't blame you at all, but they've had a revolving door. Pretty much they've had an elite prospect or a series of elite prospects, what, every 48 or 72 hours for the last 2.5-3 weeks. I mean, it's been impressive who they've had come through that door over the past 2 to 3 weeks.
I mean, you look at this. I mean, they had what Arian Smith, who we talked about, was one of the best 2020s out there, state champ long jumper, wants to break Jalen Ramsey's record. Tyson Fomicon, Akeem Dent, Trey Sanders, none of those on a junior day, by the way. And then on junior day, they had Chance Williams, Jalen Rivers, who are two studs out of Jacksonville, Maurice Goolsby, who we'll talk about, Jaquavion Frazier's his teammate, Jalen Mitchell, the Rockledge running back, Derek McClendon, Jalen Perry, Jalen Phillips, Kanata Mumfield. You know, I mean, Tim Smith, Corbin Gibson, Kalen DeLoach, Tyreek Stevenson, Frank Ladson showed up yesterday, Tuesday. You know, Keon Zipper, DeMarcus Bowman, Kendall Milton. That's just 4 and 5 stars just shotgunning through there, man. Mm-hmm. But all on different days. I think this staff should be commended for being that open to taking visitors every single day as opposed to just waiting, you know, encouraging kids to come up for a junior day. I spoke to a coach that came through this week and coached a very talented high school. And he was really impressed with how Taggart ran practice. You know, he was just impressed that, you know, that the guy was just as calm as he was and really would just, you know, make mental notes when things went wrong. If something needed to be corrected immediately, he would do it. But it very much is what we said was going to happen, like not stopping every play to yell, right? And when you do raise your voice, people take notice and they understand, okay, this is probably a really important thing we got to fix. You know, he said music was playing the whole time. The kids were loving it. The energy level and the buy-in of the kids throughout the entire practice was really good. And it impressed the high school coach, and it impressed his kids for sure.
But do we want to, like, a list of players?
Let's just go over some of the ones that I talked to. I was at the Under Armour camp on Sunday. So were Willie Taggart and Raymond Woody, by the way, because mm-hmm. their sons were playing.
Yeah, exactly.
They're allowed to be at the camp. wearing some Knowles gear, which is something that didn't always happen with some guys on the previous staff when they had kids at camps, but no wasted opportunity here. So I spoke to Diaby Hammond. He's a guard out of IMG, but he was at Lakeland before, so he rolled up there to support his teammates. This is a kid I talked to last week or 2 weeks ago at the IMG 7-on-7, and he told me that Florida State's the only school he knew would make his top 10. And I said, oh, because I wasn't sure they were recruiting him all that much. And he's a very good player, but their guard board is kind of tight right now. I mean, we know they like Lucas and Putnam kind of as their 1-2, at least from what I understand. And he's like, yeah, you know, I visited for junior day and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't follow up with him at the time because I want to go back and check my notes to see if he was at the junior day, you know, that had just happened. But I didn't see him. So when I saw him again on Sunday, I asked him and I said, hey, what junior day were you at? He's like, oh, I went to the one last year. And I was like, oh, but Florida State is the only school that's going to make your top 10 for sure. And he's like, yeah, I really like those guys. And I was like, oh, okay. Have you had a chance to talk with the new staff? And he said, no, but his teammate, Dante Lucas, talks about him a lot. Just something to keep in mind there for all you folks who see Dante Lucas having fun on social media and tweeting about the Noles, but is also the Canes and the Gators and Clemson and Georgia and all that other stuff. He must be talking enough about Florida State at IMG Academy to influence a high-level player to like Florida State a whole bunch, despite the fact that this kid has not visited FSU yet. Just a little tidbit I picked up there. Lloyd Summerall told me that Georgia and Florida State were his tops. Right now, that's the four-star defensive end at Auburndale, Florida. I think, you know, maybe the best DN in the state. We'll see. But he said it was too early to name leaders, Ingram, because he has not checked out and formed relationships with other schools. But one school he has made an effort to check out so far is Florida State, and he wants to come back for another visit soon. So that's good news.
You like where you are there? Yeah.
Yep. Keon Zipper, big tight end out of Lakeland, had a decent day at the Orlando camp. Then he actually got in the car with his coach, and they drove up to see Tallahassee, and along with, I think, five other teammates, including 2020 running back DeMarcus Bowman. After that, they went and saw Georgia and Clemson. I know Georgia made a real impression on him. Florida State, you know, I think helped improve their standing with him. Florida's obviously done a very, very nice job with him, too, and Florida thinks they're going to take back Lakeland. We'll see what happens there with that school. But I think tight end recruiting is largely going to matter. You know, how well does Trey McKitty do this year, and what kind of numbers does he put up? I happen to think he's going to be one of the breakout stars for the Seminoles this year, so that could help with tight end recruiting, certainly. And then Maurice Goolsbee, who told me that Florida State is way out in front for him as his number one. It's a 6'5" receiver out of Dinellen, Florida, former Florida commit, decommitted from the Gators. And he said that David Kelly was like the father I never had, if you know what I mean. So,
I saw that quote. That's a strong quote. Yeah.
Between all of the quotes, like, I feel like this coaching staff is just like me, or I feel like I can really relate to this coaching staff, and that quote, I think anybody who's doubting David Kelly, the hire of David Kelly at receivers coach, which we were not because we were familiar with what he did at UCF and in the state of Georgia, y'all should just drop that because David Kelly can recruit his butt off. Now, is Goolsbee a take right now? I'm not sure. I know he told me he had a 2.8, and he's working to raise that. He did take his ACT, which is good. You want to know, you know, what kind of score he got on that, obviously. He's not real fast, but they were pitching him on being kind of an Auden Tate role on the outside. If you look at Florida State's receiver board right now, I think it's pretty clearly Ladson 1, maybe Dunmore in 1A, and then I'm not sure who your 3 is. Is it Sheffield over there in Georgia? Goolsbee, is it an out-of-state kid? I'm not really sure, but it's very good they made that kind of impression on him, and he's going to come back up for the spring game, so that's certainly something to watch. And, you know, he's a kid I think if they wanted to be committed right now, definitely would be committed. I don't think they pushed for one because I think they're still trying to get a handle on exactly who they can get yeses from, and they want to make sure they get the three best yeses that they can possibly get.
All right, bud. Always good to be able to lean on your national recruiting experience and information that you're able to glean in conversations that you have with those kids. So, as always, we'll try to do our best to balance recruiting and in kind of digestible segments to where people can get the most out of it. And also, we'll not try to drown you in information. As you mentioned, like 370, 380 questions submitted since the last time we were able to put a podcast together. So by no means will we be able to hit on all of them as we kind of transition more into our individual questions. But why don't we go ahead and jump into this and see how many we can crank out in the remaining time that we have.
Yeah, let's do that. And, you know, if we get to like the, I don't know, 35-minute mark or 40-minute mark, we'll have to move on to our buy or sell segment. But first, we should talk to you about who? Oh, Madison Social. Right. Our longest running sponsor of the show and the For the Table Restaurant Group, Madison Social. Awesome pub grub and great beer selection there, right in the heart of College Town, shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium, as well as their sister restaurants, Centrale Township, the bakery Soto in Midtown. Just an awesome group, man. Nolan-owned business, you know, great food, great sights, great sounds, nice outdoor patio as well. This place y'all should check out. I know we have had so many emails and people telling us, hey, man, Tallahassee has changed so much since when I was in school. And if you're, you know, if you're my age, I'm 32, and really probably anybody in that like 28 to, I don't know, 100 age range, you come back to Tallahassee after having not been there a couple times, you know, a couple of years, you're like, whoa, what is going on Gain Street? Like, that's a totally different area now than when I went there. Like, it's nice. These places, like, aren't, like, the area is called College Town, but it's anything but college. You know, it's really more, not there aren't some students who go there, certainly, but there's,
like, they really young cater. Professionals town, yeah. Or something like that. Man, it's a great addition, and nobody has been a stronger trailblazer for some of the transformation that you talked about than the people at For the Table. So we are very fortunate to be able to partner with them. We'll remind people of the spring game get together that we're having, and we're fortunate to be able to work with them. And hey, they keep it simple and do great stuff. Great Reuben sandwich, always have remarkable, unique twist on things. They've got a strawberry shortcake stack for their April pancakes that look absurd. They are consistently performing at a high level, and we're ever so fortunate to be able to work with them.
So, you know, one thing I really like about Madso is that, like a good football team, they really nail the fundamentals before they build out with some of the trick plays. Yeah, they've got a great, you know, strawberry shortcake or shortbread pancake stack this month. That's awesome. But they don't do it at the expense of, you know, of their classics, the BLT dip or their awesome burger or their wings. You know what I mean? Like, they still nail those things. They don't let those things slip while they reach out and, mm-hmm. and take some risks. You know, you got the people that go there for the lunch crowd and get the same thing every single day, and it's consistently good.
They do not lose the ability to run off tackle because they're working on their flea flicker so much. I agree completely with what you're saying, bud.
Okay, so some questions here. Would you say any school frequently landing top 10 recruiting classes is, quote, fully committed? Ever hear any anecdotal stories of recruits being turned off from a school due to a bagman's efforts? Oh, man, more bagman questions. I would say that every school in the top 10 is fully committed, yes. Now, you can be, like, overly committed, certainly. You know, maybe do a little 140 into 70 or something like that. But I think everybody is at least fully committed in the top 10. As far as kids being turned off by bagman's efforts, not specifically, but I do think that there could be an example where a kid is, like, it's not just, hey, here's a bag of cash, come to my school. And if you treat it like that, and you don't focus on the kid's needs as far as academically, athletically, life-wise, all those kind of things, you're still not going to get the kid. You got to recruit him and then grease him.
Exactly. I think that's the greatest misconception with this, is just because, you know, something may take place or a nice tidy sum may be transferred from party A to party B, doesn't mean that actual recruiting doesn't go on. You still don't have to sell your school and sell it is what you have. It's not as though one completely negates the other. So I think it's a great point. And yeah, anybody that's in the top 10, particularly as the question stated, frequently landing in the top 10, yeah, they are fully committed. What I find interesting are like institutions that you see commitment maybe wane. So I'll point out Georgia Tech, but it's been a long time, but there was a time where Georgia Tech was fully committed to college athletics. I'm dating myself here, but just to give you an idea, you know, basketball hasn't been a clean or tidy operation for quite a while. Georgia Tech signed maybe the two most heralded point guards out of New York City ever. I mean, within a 6 or 7 year span, Kenny Anderson and Stephon Marbury is who I'm referring to. There are times where schools will be fully committed, and then there's things that come up or donors who are no longer there, and you just kind of see that commitment wane. So it's interesting to watch. These things don't happen overnight, but you know, the party that's necessarily fully into it doesn't necessarily mean that they'll always be able to maintain that commitment.
If FSU wins a natty in the next two seasons, what will have drastically improved in order to make it happen? Conversely, if Willie Taggart is no longer with the program in 4 years, what are the most likely reasons why? I ask these back-to-back because I think they're very much related. For the first part, if they're going to win a national title in the next two seasons, so I guess that counts this one and the next one, they're going to need incredible health at receiver. They're going to need somebodies to step up at linebacker, who I'm not sure.
I was about to say that. It normally, linebacker play isn't the top recipe that you necessarily throw out for a high-performing football team, but that is maybe the segment that stands out the most on defense.
You know, I think that you're going to need good linebacker play if you want to go like 10-2 or something. If you're going to win a national championship, you've got to get quarterback play. I don't know that there's a national championship winning QB on this roster. Maybe there is, but last year I had my real reservations about being able to win a national title with Francois, and I think that's why people jumped all over us when we were like, yeah, I think two losses, pretty reasonable. So quarterback, linebacker, and receiver have to either stay very healthy or play well out over their skis for an extended period, I think are probably the biggest things there. You know, the schedule in Florida State probably has the toughest schedule in the country this coming year, right? Like, they're not going to win a national title. I bet my house against them winning the national title in 2018, especially if I get even odds. I do that all day. Obviously, Vegas would make me pay quite a bit for that. As far as the flip side, if Taggart's no longer with the program in 4 years, the most likely reasons why? Probably quarterback play. I mean, that's the one position that can really drastically change a coach's fortunes. I really have a hard time seeing him not being here in four years. But I assume this question is about football related reasons and not, you know, anything, you know, off the field or whatever, which is unforeseeable. So I'll say quarterback.
Maybe the first one's tied to the second one, but maybe Florida State wins a natty in 2 years and year three is he's offered the Dallas Cowboys job or something absurd like that. We'll see. We hope to have Coach Taggart for more than 4 years. We'll see how it plays out. One of the other sites, Bud, recently posted new jersey helmet combos. Which of these do you see as the more plausible, and which were your personal favorites?
All right, I got to be real honest here. I do not care. I really don't, with very few exceptions, and I'll list them now. I do not like the black helmet. I actually don't think Florida State's uniform, meaning the jersey and pant, is really all that special. I really wasn't up in arms when they switched from the old, you know, old stuff to the new stuff. Florida State has never really won a contest about their jersey and pants. They consistently mark really high for the helmet. The helmet is what makes Florida State's uniform. It's not the jersey and the pants. Do whatever you want with the jersey and the pants within a reason. I would like to see them go back to a number that is more visible from the press box. That'd be great, but that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I'm not super into the all black look, but that's okay. You know, the all whites, the all garnets are cool. I actually like their current road look with the white tops and the gold pants. You know, maybe you could put a garnet stripe on those or something. I like uniform stuff because people click it in an absurd amount of time. Like, whenever we have uniform news on Tomahawk Nation,
it appeals to a broad range of people, too.
It's amazing how much people like uniforms. Mm-hmm. I can't get into it that much. I don't know, man. Are you a big uniform guy?
I agree with you that the helmet should have been and should always be left alone. I will say I thought the home jersey, I thought if you go back and look at that 2013 game, I think that's as attractive as a uniform pairing as you'll ever see. And I wish they would go back to that, to be quite honest. It's a great look. Obviously, Florida State's colors and stuff like that shifted. Throughout the 90s, you'll see different shades of garnet if you look at the 93 team based on 97 or whatever. You know, that uniform is the uniform that you spent 30 years building an incredible brand equity into from 85 on, really. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me to mess with that a whole lot. So the current uniforms, in my opinion, look nice, but there's too much fire insignia. You know, they're a little too busy for my personal take. I disagree with you a little bit about the jersey and the appeal. We're in very much full agreement on the helmet. So if they want to throw out some different combinations, that's fine. I would just look for the timing of that, you know, to be somewhat selective of that. I was a person who was in the stadium during that, was it the NC State game where we were wearing indoor football uniforms or something like that. It looked like
Last game of the year.
Yeah. The last game of
that was the Maryland game against the Maryland game where they honored Mickey Andrews and they had to win it just to go to a bowl in 2009. The pro combat.
I think I was like uniform. One of 37,000 people in Doak that day or something. I mean, it was absurd. But I've been there and I've seen them wear pro combat unis at maybe the worst time they could ever think. So. I'd like for a little bit of selective thought being in the deployment, but I have no problem if they occasionally wear a black jersey or different color combination.
Oh, one more thing. The one thing I really don't like, do not wear a white helmet. If you're going to go with the total blackout thing, I get it. If you have to go with a black helmet, I'd prefer you didn't. I'd rather you just wear your gold helmet and keep that, always. Like Michigan, I don't think it's ever going to go with like alternate helmets. The white helmet looks terrible. Do not wear that. I wish they would just kind of take it out of the locker room. If you get some of the equipment guys, just kind of shuffle that thing off to the side so that nobody puts that on anymore. That looks like trash. It's just not. It's not a good look. So don't wear the white helmet.
You've got to give a shout out to the Jalapeno Edition Louisiana Hot Sauce. It's perfect for breakfast. All right. Well, thank you, sir. In celebration of the three ingredients in Louisiana Hot Sauce, how about a quick top three list? Name your top three underrated players from the Jimbo Fisher era. Our questionnaire states his or is Terrence Brooks, Kenny Shaw, and Terrence Smith. That's quite the trio there, sir.
Whew, okay. I'm going to borrow one of his for ours. I mean, we can do a combined one here if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Brooks, I'm definitely taking. That guy was really good, and there's still a lot of Noel fans who, for some reason, think he sucks. But, in fact, he was awesome. So that is kind of weird still. But he was really good.
I thought people slept on Telvin Smith personally. I'm kidding.
The last year, especially.
Being particularly sarcastic there. Underrated, or at least underappreciated.
Because most of the guys I feel like we tried to give a lot of love to if they were legitimately good. Because of when he played, I don't know that people realized how good Derek Nnadi was, and they may not realize it until this year, now that he's gone.
Yeah.
Certainly his best years were kind of like tumultuous years.
I was going to say, Nnadi's a great pick. I mean, it's all based on the prism of which you view this through. Some people may think that Terrence Brooks is particularly appreciated, or Kenny Shaw. Jacoby McDaniel probably played at a higher level than people appreciated, and there was so much talent on that team that I can see where maybe some of his contributions, particularly after coming back from that ankle injury, wouldn't have been fully understood. Honestly, the three guys he has, there's not a thing wrong with them. Smith, Shaw, and Brooks are hard to find fault with. But Bobby Hart probably had a much better career than people thought or gave him credit for at the time.
Here's one for you. How about Xavier Rhodes? I guess he did get a lot of love. I'm just thinking that was a while back. Did Devontae get enough love?
Probably wasn't appreciated enough at the time. I think everybody loves Devonta Freeman. He's one of the more beloved characters of the program of the past 5 or 8 years. But just as far as the people's opinion of the football player while he was playing, I'm not sure people appreciated exactly how special the talent he was. I think a lot of people thought Freeman was just smart, you know, smart, strong, and ran real hard, which all three things are obviously applicable, but much more dynamic athlete than maybe some saw him as.
What about, like, DeBrow Smiley?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what could have been?
Here's one. Chad Abram.
Chad Abram's a great call. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, for an offense that used a fullback, they actually had to have him play well, and he did on a consistent basis. You know, good blocker, good receiver. I think he's still in the league. Just a tough, hard-nosed kid, good special teamer. I'm going to make Chad Abram our number three. We'll go Terrence Brooks, either McDaniel or Nnadi, and Chad Abram. That's a good question.
Oh, it's a nice question. Nice little positive association with the Jimbo era, which nothing wrong with that. There's a lot to appreciate. Hey, guys, I just started listening this past year to the Nolecast to become addicted to it, just like my wife and I have become addicted to Madison Social. It's such a unique restaurant experience with great menu and beer options. I know you have talked on how Taggart's coaching staff is younger and more relevant when it comes to recruiting, connecting with players, and the newest trends on play schemes. But who would you want more as your head coach, a loyal and focused Jimbo Fisher or Willie Taggart? I guess what I'm really asking is, who do you consider to be the overall better coach?
So I think timelines matter here a lot, right? You know, if you told me that Jimbo was going to be loyal and focused again, does that entail that he was going to fire like seven or eight coaches that we needed to fire? Does that entail that he was going to be able to fix the relationships that he had ruined within the program and with Booster? You see what I'm saying? Like, we're kind of asking, hey, would you rather have what, like 2013 Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah, I think you're basically asking, do you have a Jimbo Fisher who has the ability to like hit a reset button, both in his approach to the program and his relationships with people surrounding it, and all kinds of other fanciful stuff that can only be posed in a hypothetical question?
Well, then I if that's right, okay, so that person doesn't exist. But if he did, I'm going to take him, because if that person did exist, well, then that guy's already won a national championship at the school that I'm at. So I think then it's a rather obvious answer that you take Jimbo. Would I rather have Willie or the guy that Jimbo had become? The answer for me is, again, obvious. I would rather have Willie. Jimbo's more proven. I don't know that Jimbo is currently a better coach. I mean, I guess we'll see. Certainly, I don't think he would have been a better coach currently at Florida State, given the situation that he had left and all the relationships that he ruined.
It's tough, man. I mean, those questions are more or less impossible. I think, you know, you had the coach who you had, and in my opinion, you had him at the highest level that he will perform at professionally, and now you've got a guy who's got something to prove, and the program appears to be on the uptick. So we'll watch. Really, there'll never be a necessarily like a fair comparison, but a better comparison will be to Judge Taggart after he's had 4 or 5 years to dictate a program and kind of compare the two on a full track record. So with that, we'll move to the next question. Every single player on the roster is not allowed to play the position they currently play next season. For purposes of the question, I've qualified the groups as quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends, offensive line, all the groups. Which players would have the most success at their new positions? Really love the show, guys.
This is fun.
This is quite a lot of fun can be had here. I agree.
Okay. I'm almost thinking about like which ones would be the worst.
You almost want to draft this off as far as like who you would, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'll give you first pick.
I kind of want to table this, to be honest, because like this is something we could probably like open up on and just full throttle this thing during the offseason. Sometimes in the offseason we'll just answer like two questions in a show and go long form on them. But I'm going to move this to our off-season section down below.
I'll just tell you that I'll get first pick, and I'm moving Brian Burns to a place where I can get the ball in his hands. Not to spoil anything, but just letting you know. Ooh,
I like that. Mike, I think I know who I want to be my quarterback too, so this will be pretty fun. Ingram, you know, it is time, man. It's time to buy a home. It's time to move to buy or sell. Brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. Call 844-FSU-LOAN or go to fsuhomeloans.com. That's 844-FSU-LOAN, fsuhomeloans.com. It's Resolution Home Loans, a no-loan business. Chad and Shannon will hook you up. When you call, you deal directly with Shannon. Shannon is Chad's ace. You don't have to call and deal with, hey, you know, this is my loan reference number. I was dealing with this guy last time. Now I'm talking to this girl. Whatever. No. Chad hooked you up with the best. We hooked you up with the best. Looks like we already have two deals in the works in 10 weeks, man. Mm-hmm. So, NOLCast listeners, thank you. That is impressive. It really speaks to our audience and speaks to the quality product that Resolution Home Loans provides. And we are excited to do another buy or sell segment. So here's how this works. Buy or sell. You guys ask us to buy or sell an idea. And then we will say buy or sell. Pretty simple. And then we'll generally tell you why we think that. It's also a good opportunity for some disagreement between Ingram and I, because a lot of times people say, hey, y'all should disagree more. You agree on everything, but we don't. And so we'll get to show it some here. I think tonight we have like 9 of these.
Fantastic. Yeah, this has been very, very well received. We've had a lot of input since we debuted this on our last podcast.
So also, good questions this time. I've got to say, like, people ask questions that I think they genuinely had trouble answering themselves. Like, it's not like stuff that's super obvious. So that makes it for a better show. We appreciate that.
First one, bud. All right. Does Florida State make it to a New Year's? I take it this is either a New Year's Day bowl or a
I think he means like the 6 bowls.
Like, so, the, yeah.
Which is like playoffs or what?
Are the two
rotational Rose, Sugar, Cotton, are, yeah, Orange, exactly. Fiesta, Chick-fil-A?
Yep. No, not this year. Not in my opinion. Let's circle back to the conversation we had 2 or 3 weeks ago where we talked about we talked about a very realistic possibility of losing maybe 3-4 games. I don't want to lose myself and some of the optimism that always occurs when you see, you know, when you see practice and you see individual highlights and things. I think it's a really talented team. Yeah, the team may perform a little bit better than we expected a month ago, but I don't want to lose what I thought was a decently grounded idea as to expectations or what you may ultimately see as far as a performance.
I agree with you there. I'm not picking Florida State to win the conference this year. That means they would have to go as an at-large, and I think that they're most likely record during the year is probably 9-3. You generally don't get to go to a New Year's Six Bowl at 9-3, so we are in agreement with that one. Ingram, here you go. Walt Bell is at Florida State longer than 2 seasons.
This is a tough one. If it was 3, I would think this is pretty easy. Longer than 3. If it's 2, I'm going to buy because very much tied to my last answer. I'm not sure Florida State will have quite the record that makes Bell like a super hot prospect as far as a coaching addition. It may be, you know, that may be a little bit of a lagging phenomenon. But I think that Bell is somebody that's already stood out to just people that I've talked with in the program as someone who's got a incredibly bright future in the coaching industry. So maybe I'm a little bit optimistic in thinking that Florida State will have him for 3 years. But maybe it's a little bit of pessimism as far as what this year might lead to that leads me to maybe a little bit of optimism in the ability to retain him.
I'm going
to
buy it. Now, I'm a little bit worried for a couple reasons. There's a number of jobs that I think he would be considered for after just 2 years of success. So it's going to depend on if these head coaches are at these jobs. And these jobs would be like Tulsa, Arkansas State, where he has previous coaching experience, Southern Miss, Troy, where Neil Brown is a real hot candidate. I actually think that's going to work against Walt Bell here. So I think Neil Brown is going to get out of Troy after this year. And I think Walt Bell probably needs to prove himself, you know, for a good 2 years in Tallahassee as opposed to just 1. And then North Carolina as well. I mean, what kind of guy can UNC attract? Not that I think Fedora is going to go anywhere, but if he does, certainly I think they would at least look at Bell. But I'm going to go with you there. Now, 2019 certainly could be a springing off point, if you will, because Akers is going to be a senior and you're going to have another guy, you know, number of guys who are pretty legit. DJ Matthews will be a senior, that kind of stuff. But I'm going to agree with you. I think I'm going to buy that. So that'll be a buy. Ingram, 3 or more Cam Akers completions in 2018.
I like it. I like it. I think this might have been a passing reference you made as we closed the draft question up a second ago. But I will buy this three or more. I'll say Cam Akers puts the ball in the air six times next year and completes three or four of them.
Ooh, okay. So we're gonna have some disagreement here. I think that I'm gonna sell this because there are multiple guys on this offense who play skill positions who can throw, including, by the way, DJ Matthews has a really good arm.
Yeah, that's true.
Like one of the strongest arms on the team. Three or more, man, that's just tough. So you think they're going to throw six passes with Cam Akers? You think they're having Cam Akers throw a pass basically every other game?
Every other game. Wouldn't shock me to see him just to further plant the seed, have him do some things. You may see, I know everybody, we get about three questions an episode about seeing Akers in some kind of wildcat formation, and I don't know that that's necessarily something that you'll see a ton of, but I think they use Akers for all that they can this year, and that includes putting the ball in the air every once in a while.
Will you guys please revisit the buy or sell that you said on three backs having 500 plus yards? I had a really good conversation with this emailer about our thing. I think I said sell on this, that I didn't think three would. And my reasoning was that they have, at the very least, four, if not five backs they're going to try and get the ball to, and that would be Akers, who's your stud, and then, you know, Patrick, who's pretty proven as a decent player, you know, White, LeBourn, and then also Amir Rasul. I was thinking they were going to have more spread out, maybe a couple guys in like the 300 to 400 range. Now, he was pointing out to me that they were going to have more carries, as I did say on Twitter, 142 more carries last year for Oregon than for Florida State. But I said, yeah, but a decent portion of those are going to be more carries by the quarterback. So it's not like all of those additional carries are going to running backs. In fact, probably about 30 of them are going to go to receivers. Willie Taggart is big on the jet sweep, about making defenses move horizontally and then have to try to defend passes vertically, especially when you have a guy like an Ontario Wilson or a DJ Matthews or even Amir Rasul in the slot running some jet sweep stuff. So I'm going to stick with my under on the three backs having 500 yards, and maybe I'll look foolish for that.
If I remember correctly, that's where I was as well, and I will stick to it. No revision needed from my end as far as that particular question. Although it was a great one, and I enjoyed the conversation both in this podcast and the previous one that came from it. Bud
Ingram, would you say that sale is final? You can tell we don't rehearse this stuff.
Well done. Bud, will FSU field an NFL secondary, meaning 100% of future NFL players, with its nickel package starter this year, or when they go to their nickel package and the people that are the starters in that package this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, okay, is Levante Taylor going to make the NFL? Yes. Is Stanford Samuels, barring injury? Yes. Is Jaden Woodby? I mean, obviously he's a freshman, so it's very hard to project that, but tentatively say yes. Will whoever wins the other safety battle, you know, opposite whomever, probably be an NFL quality player? I think so. Yeah, mm-hmm. Most likely. Yeah. And then, you know, Hampson Nasruldeen, I think is going to be an NFL guy for sure. So I'm going to say yeah.
I think I'm going to echo your sentiments there. I do. It's a little early to be saying a freshman's going to play in the NFL, but if you would be able to judge a freshman at this point and say he's a guy who more or less has a better chance to not have played in the league, that would be pretty much what Woodbay's time in Tallahassee would look like. So I will kind of echo what you said there. But the next one was, Willie Taggart have a three-year stretch at FSU that is equivalent to or better than Dabo's last 3 years at Clemson? Points out the record was 40 wins and 4 losses.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'll sell this.
The odds are very much against that happening. That is an incredible run. What was Jimbo's best? Like, he had the undefeated, then he had one loss, and then he went 12-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think that's likely. I'm not saying it can't happen, but if I gotta, you know, if I'm trying to place bets on these and be realistic with y'all, like I think you want us to do, I'm gonna say no. I don't think he's gonna go 40-4 in a 3 year stretch. That's incredible.
Yeah, play in playing the type of games that Clemson played. There's just a lot there. So, yep, that one will be one where we both point to sell.
You got to be insanely good and insanely lucky.
Very true.
At the same time.
And you also have to face a Clemson in whatever three-year stretch that is that, we've said all that we need to say on that one. DJ and Terry combined score 14 or more offensive touchdowns.
This is a pretty good number, I think. I'm going to go under on this. If the number had been like 11 or 12, I would have taken over. I don't know that DJ is really that big of a red zone threat, which probably hurts his touchdown numbers a little bit. Terry, you know, we got to see what he can do in game. Certainly he's impressed in practice so far with some of his stuff. And I do think he's a good example of a player that this staff might do a better job of utilizing than a prior staff did. So, you know, hey, look at this. We got a 6'4" guy who's pretty fast and catches the ball fairly well, but he doesn't really know how to run routes yet. Well, we could either sit him on the bench or we could ask him to do the certain things he can do on the field while we work on some of the other things. And that's what this staff seems to be doing, although they don't really have much of a choice because the receiver depth right now is so poor until the freshmen arrive over the summer. I'm going to go under, but just slightly. Just slightly. I mean, if one of these guys gets 8 and the other gets 5, mm-hmm. it's still an under. So I'm going to say sell.
In your opinion, is DJ the punt returner?
I think it's got to be DJ or Levante. Or Levante. And they've both just shaken dudes out of their jocks in practice.
If I let all touchdowns count, would you take the 14 or more?
Yes, okay. I think so. That's definitely a game changer. I think DJ could have one on a return. You know, maybe Terry if he does kicks. By the way, the other reason why I want to sell this, and this is something that's going to make people real happy. Who do you think was the worst practice player on Florida State last year? Like the guy that just would not give good effort and, you know, slacked off and did not have good attitude and that type of stuff.
Was it number 8?
Yeah. And you know what? I was told this weekend, you know who's one of the best, mm-hmm. like hardest workers and leaders busting his butt all throughout the chase? Nooney Murray. Like, that's kind of shocking, man, given his track record. But it does give me a lot of hope that maybe some of the other guys who, you know, for the last couple of years were not necessarily giving their all or consistently doing it, that they can turn around. Because if he can do it, anybody can do it. And if he comes back healthy from his knee injury, he's going to take some touchdowns away from DJ and Terry. Like, DJ and Terry are the best receivers right now in spring. If Nooney Murray comes back healthy and he works as hard as I was told he's working, then he's your best receiver.
The next one, Bud, I'm gonna make a slight amendment to it. Buy or sell that Cam Akers is a Heisman finalist at any time before he leaves Florida State.
Oh, okay, because it did say this year.
This year.
I'm going to buy that, actually, because you're giving me both years, assuming we only get it for two more. Mm-hmm. If it was just this year, I think we would both sell, right? Because you don't typically
that's
see
why
running
I changed
backs
it,
off three lost teams.
I thought it would be two. Yeah.
But I'm going to buy. I think that, you know, if you give me like a small chance this year and a medium chance next year, I mean, that's pretty nice when you combine that. So I'm going to go ahead and buy that.
I'm going to buy it as well. I think Akers is a special enough player that they do enough unique things with to show off his talent. I think Cam Akers becomes kind of a star this year for the rest of the college football world and is maybe one of the more influential college football players in 2020. So, I'll buy the idea of him being a finalist sometime before he moves on to Sundays. Next one, Bud, buy or sell, Florida State records more than 40 sacks this year.
Gosh, these numbers are brutal, man. They're almost setting us up to look like haters of the Noles or something. How many teams had 40 sacks last year? You want to take a guess?
I don't know. How many?
13. Now, of those 13, you want to guess how many played in a conference championship game and a bowl game?
7.
6. Now, we don't think Florida State's going to play in a conference championship game this year, which means they have to do this in only 13 games. That means they have to average more than 3 sacks a game. There weren't very many teams who did that last year. In fact, there were only, looks like, 11. That's not very many. Yet, you know, at Oregon, they were at like 2.54 per game. That's not unheard of. Florida State does have some good pass rushers. I mean, notably Brian Burns, Josh Kando, on the other side. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive. The only thing that makes me wonder here is, like, if they blitz a ton, are the opponents going to be trying, like, so hard to get rid of the football, you know, that they throw it away before you can get them on a sack, or maybe they throw some picks. But I got to tell you, man, I'm bullish on them getting a lot of sacks this year. So I'm going to kind of throw a curveball here, and reluctantly I'm going to say over. If the better number to me would be like 37, 36 range, but I'm going to go ahead and say over. I think they're going to be one of the few teams that does 40, man.
I'll take the same. I mentioned this in the last podcast. I think Florida State has some impressive defensive statistics at the end of the year, and sacks are one of them. So 40 is a high number. It's not something that'll be attained easily, but sitting here at the end of March, yeah, I think Florida State does that.
Quarterback, over 4,000 yards passing, two 1,000-yard receivers, 1,000-yard running back, two 1,000-yard rushers. All right, this is a little, the format on this is a little wonky, I guess. This may be a copy-paste error by me, or the commenter might have just mashed everything together. All right, we'll do a little quick buy-sell here, Jim Cramer style. 100% sell on the 4,000 yards passing, absolutely not. Look, this is a running offense. They're going to be running a lot more than they used to, and they're going to be passing less. When they do pass, they're going to take deep shots. They're not going to be chucking the ball all the time. So hard sell on that. Oregon last year only had 2,469 yards.
Yeah.
If you gave me 3,000 yards, I would probably still go under.
4,000, that's an aggressive number.
Not a chance. But I like this question because it gives us a good opportunity to point out like just how few quarterbacks actually do that. And look, this is not one of these offenses going to produce one of these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 quarterbacks nationally that threw for 4,000 yards last year. All of them, except for Sam Darnold, are in some sort of like air raid system. This is not that. This is a running offense. 2,000-yard receivers, definitely under. Again, I mean, it's not a big-time passing offense. It's more about running. Definitely they're going to have a 1,000-yard back, I'll say for sure. I think Akers is a lock as long as he stays healthy. 2,000-yard rushers, I don't think Patrick's going to get the ball that much, man, to go for 1,000. So I'm going to sell that. Any disagreement on any of those?
No, none.
And then the final one here in our buy or sell segment brought to you by Resolution Home Loans. Call 844-FSU-LOAN or visit FSUHomeLoans.com. Cook to Akers is the best back-to-back backs in FSU history. Buy or sell.
This is a good one, man. This is a really good one. In general, I think people slept on Travis Minor as far as how good of a back he is. So why don't we frame who the best combination that Cook and Akers would ultimately have to surpass?
So it's Freeman Cook and Dunn Minor, right?
See, Amp Lee and Warwick Dunn didn't overlap at all. So or didn't Lee was gone in 91, Dunn was in 93. I'm trying to think of any. No, so yeah, it would pretty much have to be the group that we just discussed. By the time they leave, are they the best back-to-back group in Florida State history? Yeah, they probably are. I don't think people appreciate Travis Minor for the back that he was, and he was a better player than I think a lot of people thought. He just wasn't quite the running back that came out of Baton Rouge Catholic 4 years earlier than he did. Yeah, Akers is a special, special kid, and Cook is somebody that we diagnosed pretty early as the best back in program history. So yeah, I'm going to lean towards buying this by the time that their career's done with.
It almost has to be. I mean, look, because if you think about some of these other guys, right? Greg Allen and Sammy Smith, they didn't over. Well, I don't know, man. Greg Allen, Sammy Smith did like they did go back to back.
They did back to back
this now.
Then that's probably the best. That's the best pairing.
I think that's it. I didn't realize they were back-to-back like that. Sammy Smith finished with 25-39, Greg Allen with 37-69 on 411 carries for Sammy Smith and 624 for Greg Allen.
To some of the younger Noles, and this is young for us too. I mean, Sammy Smith played when I was 5 years old, but Sammy Smith was a complete badass, was a first-round pick. I think he was the 9th overall pick coming out of school. Sammy Smith was an absolute dude. And Allen was the most accomplished back in school history prior to Dalvin. So yeah, that's quite the pairing.
What a cool question, huh? Now, Akers Cook does absolutely have the chance to break this.
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. Sammy Smith, man. Go watch his highlights if you're not familiar with him.
I mean, if Akers goes 1,000-1,000 after last year and he finishes with like 2,700 something or whatever, you know, Dalvin finished with 44-64. He's FSU's all-time leading rusher by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a cool question. I like stuff like that. So great job this week by the listeners, man. That is cool. You know, really appreciate all y'all who found us during the coaching search thing, sticking with us. You know, we just looked and our March numbers are three times as big as last March, and our February numbers actually were four times as big as last February. So that's kind of a cool thing. To grow like that in a year, and we certainly appreciate all the 5-star reviews that y'all have been leaving us. In fact, we finally hit 2,000 reviews, man, that's on
wild.
iTunes tonight.
Absolutely,
did you
wild.
See that?
I did not see that, but that's incredible.
2,001, not 2,001 5-stars, but the vast majority, 1,951 5-stars, 2,001 overall ratings. That's probably like what 98%, 97.5. Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool.
We'll take it. Homework assignment will be to go and watch a quick YouTube clip of Sammy Smith if you've never otherwise seen him. That was about a 6'2", 230-pound bad man running the football. So with that, Bud, we will thank our sponsors, we'll thank our listeners, and we'll look forward to recording another podcast somewhere in the next week or so. We'll be right back.